literally the engineers who decided I should be on stage right now. Good morning. And look how responsible you all are. Thursday night in Vegas is always a challenge. This is our last full day of the show. I can tell because my legs now ache. Because, the conference center is basically in a different time zone from the hotel. And coming back and forth several times in a day, you know, that even my Fitbit's like, dude, slow down. But, saw heavily populated bars last night, so I'm sure everybody had a great time. We did a bunch of evening sessions. Who went to the Emerging Experiences group? There's a few hands out there. There was the sequel, After Dark. That was fun, too. I poked my head in there as well. And the security group was there as well. There's a bunch of folks in there. And Mary Jo and Paul Throt had a little gathering as well. So the fun part about being an organizer is I got to have a drink at each one and then go to dinner. We've got a very action-packed hour and another fun day. Anybody sticking around for a post-con? Because we've got more to go tomorrow. Awesome. Okay, a bunch of folks staying in. There's so much to talk about. It's an exciting time. I've had the pleasure of knowing Steve Guggenheimer for a number of years now. He's been leading the developer evangelism group. He's a corporate vice president and always puts on an amazing show. So I'll call him up here right now. Steve Guggenheimer.
Hey. Thank you. Good morning. Yep. See you in an hour. All right. Well, first off, thank you for getting up on Friday morning after Thursday night at the show. I personally appreciate that. Sometimes that's tough duty. It is the, Friday before Halloween? I thought about this. Next year I should try and work on this talk to basically talk about how does technology impact holidays and make them more fun. But I didn't get to that this year, so that'll be next year's theme. I thought, given you had Scott and Brad and lots of sessions on sort of all the things going on sort of here and now and what we're all working on, maybe I'd spend some time looking back just a little bit to get a sense for sort of what things look like in a short term and then how they project out, and then look forward, in particular around technologies that are interesting and hot right now that we're all seeing and playing with a little bit, and we'll just work through a set of those to sort of set a model for what 15 or 10 years from now might look like. And I don't have some 15-year-out video that puts it all together yet, but I'll challenge all of us to start to work on that, because things that we're working on from AR and VR and big data and cognitive services and AI, they're going to come to pass. They might all be silos today, but when those things come together, we'll hit a new wave of sort of transformation and disruption. So I'll start there. I spend a lot of time with commercial entities, government entities, you name it, big companies, small companies, and a ton of time with startups. Every large organization or entity out there today, company, industry, they'll tell you they're transforming. They're using digital transformation to change the way they build products, talk to customers, do supply chain analysis, essentially trying to reinvent their businesses. Part of the reason they're doing that is because what technology allows them to do and the promise. Part of it is because there's a whole bunch of startups out there, more than I've ever seen before, who are going, I don't have all that legacy software, hardware, infrastructure ideas. I'm going to go recreate that company, industry, business, whatever, from scratch, and I'm going to do it better. And so you have this world where you're busy sort of helping people take advantage of technology for whatever it is they want to do in their business to be competitive or change or in schools or in government. And then you're helping all these startups try and sort of do it from scratch, and you're busy blending the two together. And so I always say we're at the crossroads of transformation and disruption, because all the transformers are on one side of the street and all the disruptors are on the other, and we try and mix and mingle them. It's a ton of fun. It's probably the most interesting time in terms of the industry relative to how much change at the same time. So I sort of step back and say, well, how did we get here? What's different about this particular window of time than any of the other periods of time before? And the truth is, it's the ubiquity of sort of processors, bandwidth, and storage, and how you can use them that allow sort of digital technologies to infuse everything. But if you go back to 2000, and we had to go sort of dig out the right pictures and some of the interesting things, AOL was merging with Time Warner, which is kind of interesting because now the AT&T, Time Warner likes companies that begin with the letter A. Narrowband, the I love you virus. So in the old days, viruses were more happy and friendly viruses. They had happy names. It's interesting, email and browsers were sort of one and two. I'm not sure that's changed too much. And what we did, we ran an event then called Forum 2000, which was to try and say, hey, technology is moving ahead pretty quickly. What are some ideas of what might happen 15 years from now, or even 10 years from now, as these technologies move forward, as processing and bandwidth become more ubiquitous? So I'm going to run a video here in a second. This is circa 2000. I worked on the video itself. We can talk about the quality of the video later. This was sort of state of the art. I think it's gotten a little bit dodgy over the years. But we had to go dig this out to find it. So let's go ahead and run this video.
And that place we visited last time should be right here.
Good morning. Thank you for calling Hawthorne's. How can I help you this morning?
Yes, we were wondering about reservations for Sunday, March 9th. For six people, around 7 o'clock?
Six. Seven on the ninth. What's that? Anything else I can help you with?
Oh, no, thank you. Okay, you finish up by yourself.
Okay, honey. What's this?
Another way, too, because it's...
That sounds wonderful.
I was wondering what she was going to remember.
I've got this oil nice and hot. The fish is going to go in, and I'm going to put it in. What are we in? The
yes, here we go, here we go. Hey, folks, welcome to the zoo.
Thank you.
Any questions? Need a map?
No, thanks.
Sean here is
going to be our navigator.
Take care of
yeah.
it.
Right
up.
Watch you, Sean.
I got it.
Have a good day.
It looks so human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes sense. Well, it says here that they share 98% of their genetic material with humans. It's beeping. What is
beeping.
That?
Oh. Okay, Freddy's here. Wow.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, what's up, Freddy?
When did you guys get here?
Hey, listen, ask him if he wants to join up with us later.
Hey, Freddy, you want to meet up with us later at the hippo exhibit? I don't know, around 1?
Cool. I'll ask my dad. It should be fine.
Cool. See ya.
Orangutans!
By day, honk.
Oh, look at that. A day at the zoo. That's
pretty sharing photos, pretty impressive. So it's winding down. The whole, did you like our phone there, our blue phone? That was before 3D printers, by the way. So there was a decent amount of work put into that. But all of the ideas, being able to sort of call a restaurant and set up a reservation sort of over the internet, finding a map for the zoo, a fast pass for the zoo, knowing your friend was there, sharing pictures seamlessly, it's kind of laughable. And if you look at the video and the rest, you're like, ah. But the truth is all those things happen today and so much more. We had other scenarios. We had when they're in the van, they could find a restaurant on the way to the zoo. So it's all the silliness was all sort of there. And we looked at it and it was starting to happen. But now you look at it today and you're like, that's nothing. You know, the world has moved so much further. And there's sort of three big things that I always talk about. It's the processor speed, size, power, so that basically we can put processors everywhere. It's bandwidth, not perfect today, but compared to where we were, it feels pretty ubiquitous. And then storage. And in fact, when they talk about the fourth revolution, they're really talking about the cloud and what storage has done there and the cost of storage coming down and the availability in the cloud. So these three things and where they are today, sort of every session you guys watched and every industry and person I talk with, you know, they come together. And so I've told the story of the connected cow here before. If you put a pedometer on a cow today and you track how much it walks around, you can actually make more cows more efficiently. You can make more milk. And there's a whole bunch of companies working on that. If you look at media, we went from a couple of broadcasting companies and a television to a couple of broadcasting companies and a whole bunch of cable channels, a few cable operators and a box next to the TV, to now Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and pick your favorite service, and all of the screens are TVs. And so that industry is pretty much blown up, and AT&T's buying Time Warner. The cable guys are all trying to connect in. All the folks that are now were aggregators or distributors, Amazon and Hulu and Netflix, are creating original content. So that industry is under change. Sports, NASCAR, PGA, NFL, Real Madrid, we've worked with all of them. How you work with the athletes, how you track them as assets, and how performance monitoring, how you connect with the fans. So there isn't an industry that's not under change, and we'll continue to sort of work through those. What's fun to do now, though, is sort of look at all of the new technologies that are coming along that'll sort of change the way companies think about transforming themselves 10 years from now. And this is sort of a fun picture of sort of what the world's become, from screens to social networks to big data in the cloud, et cetera, et cetera. I thought what I'd do is I'd take a set of building blocks, and we just walk through them with some videos and a few demos, mostly videos today, and just have some fun looking at these to sort of spur the imagination for what the next wave will look like. And so with that, we're going to walk through big data, intelligence bots. None of these are going to be super deep. They'll be mostly for fun. There'll be some deeper sessions on some of these as we go through the rest of the day, and some were earlier in the week. Let's start with big data. I like the term the new oil. If we thought about sort of cars and industrial automation, data is for sure the oil of the future. We see big data and intelligence very heavily linked. It's hard to have sort of great intelligence without great data. We see it across every industry we play with. Now, it's overspoken today in some ways, because every startup I go to says, hey, I've got a data platform, or I have all this great data, I'm gonna monetize that and make a fortune. Having lots of data, somewhat useful. Being able to do something with it, that's actually the hard trick in all of this. But sort of any of the industries I showed, sports with Real Madrid, 400 million fans around the world. You can put 100,000 people in the stadium. What can I do with the data for the other 399,900,000, et cetera, to sort of reach them better, to better target them, to access their interests? How can I use social media to do that and the information coming from that? Energy, every energy company that's out there. ThyssenKrupp in engineering and manufacturing. I don't know if Scott did the usual. Here's how we make predictive maintenance for elevators, as opposed to waiting for somebody to break down in it. How can I get ahead of it? And so people are using data. AccuWeather, we spend a ton of time with AccuWeather. They've taken years and years and years of trends of weather and then how it impacts, you know, industries like retail or hotels, et cetera. They sell that as a service today, but now they're using more of the data sets and machine learning to try to give even richer information and then sell that as a service to all types of organizations in terms of how they think about their business. So data's there. Now, sources, storage, and analytics. Sources is sort of step one. It's not just the data you own that's sort of sitting in the middle, your ERP system or your CRM system. All of the sources from social networks, all the signals from IoT devices, you pick where you want it to come from. And then the curated set of data that comes from the web. Then the trick is to bring it all together in a way you can use it. We started with SQL databases. We got to data warehouses. We're now up to data lakes and data stores. I'm not sure data oceans next or data planets, but we'll figure it out. DocumentDB, Redis Cache. So figuring out how to store and get access to the data is one piece. And then working with it, Hadoop in a batch process, as we're getting IoT data, real-time data, stream analytics, being able to use something like R to program against the data sets, machine learning, languages like Python tools. So the ability to work with the data, the key for everyone as we're doing this is to make sure you're pulling the right data out and putting it in the right place as it comes in. So building a customer care bot down the road, for example, it's interesting if you know the answers. It's also pretty helpful to know which answers worked. So make sure you're capturing the data. Did that answer work for that customer or not? So that gets fed into the model over time. Models are only as good as the data behind them. Getting access to the data, bringing it in, is going to come from all the tools and systems that you guys build. Now, I thought I'd give you an example from a startup. I love this name, Miraculous. You just have to think about it for a minute. That's probably one of the best names. I always ask a startup, where'd you get your name? These guys win the prize. What Miraculous does, which is pretty interesting, is they basically work at the microRNA level. They capture biofluid, and from that, they look for microRNA, and I don't understand this well, so I'm doing my best here. But essentially, if you have certain genes present in your body, you may be susceptible to diseases. It doesn't say you'll absolutely get it, but it says you have a sort of predetermined that you could get it. It sits there. MicroRNA then is a link to that. So what they've done is they built a tool for capturing biofluid and then comparing microRNA to diseases to genes. Pretty interesting piece of work. I'll show you a video in a second just that shows some of the mapping. What we did with them is there's also a huge library of the connection between microRNA diseases and genes in literature. However, the literature is not very well curated. It's not easy to come by. So we helped them use a set of cognitive services to go and take all of the unstructured data that's out there on these on the papers that have been written and use that with entity matching to help them basically be able to tell a story and connect the dots. So let me run a video for you. I think I have a slide that says run the video. Yep. So let's run this video and I'll sort of talk over it. So here, red is diseases, blue is microRNA, and purple are genes. And so if you want to do a search to sort of see how these things relate, you can do a search up in the upper right-hand corner. And so I think in a second here, they'll do a search across, I think, BRCA A and BRCA B, which if you're familiar with, for breast cancer or ovarian cancer, that's one of the gene signals. And here what they're doing then is comparing that with what other microRNA signals or detected microRNA should we look at. And so then the interesting part is, okay, we've got these connections. What literature is out there to go against that? And so then we did some work with them to help them go through all the unstructured data that's out there, all the documents, and allow them to basically pull up articles that have, in this case, a connection between a microRNA 17 and the BRCA2 gene. And then if you click on it, you can pull up the documentation, get the full text, and dig into it. So if you've ever, I think all of us have been to a doctor, if you've ever dealt with the medical industry, it's not a perfect science. And there's a ton of information out there that is not well curated. So using machine learning to curate it, connect it into something, this is a tool called Loom, something like what Miraculous is doing, helps sort of further the science forward. And a really interesting use of very, very big data, both on the gene side and the microRNA side, but also in just in all the documentation. So a good piece of big data coming together with a startup, doing some very interesting work, very powerful work for a cause, and one of many. So that's sort of data, that's our oil, that's the beginnings of the conversation. The second thing then is to sort of go to intelligence. And some folks, including some of our folks, use the term democratizing AI, making AI available for everyone. AI is tricky because AI means sort of anything to anyone, depending on who you ask. I would say, I love, there was a phrase that I heard, which was AI is a new UI. That doesn't really work because since AI can mean anything, that means you have infinite UI. But I do, the notion of adding intelligence into systems, in our case, we'll use the term cognitive services, very, very helpful. In fact, that microRNA demo I did, that entity linking service on the bottom, that was one of the cognitive services we used. This is an area we've been working for a long time. If you look in the middle of the chart, there's one called Language Understanding Intelligence Services, LUIS. That's basically your natural language processing engine. If you want to do anything with language, if you want to speak into something and then have it translated, you want to have it understood, you have to start with the basics of linguistic understanding. It's actually a very hard problem. We've been at it for about 15 years. I actually have a video going back even further from that one of one of the first demos we did in this particular area. But these services, once you have the language understanding, then you can build in speech recognition, speech to text, language to language translation. So when Skype's doing language to language translation, it starts with that service. You can do the same thing with vision, computer vision, face recognition, right? And from face recognition, you can go to emotions, you can go to video. On the other end, you can do things like the entity linking. You can use some of the Bing services for the curated side of the web. So you have these tools underneath, these 26 cognitive services, which are the beginning for building intelligent systems or building intelligence into whatever it is that you're trying to create. So I go back to the Miraculous demo, and I'll go forward into our bot demos. These cognitive services are the underpinnings. And for this, I thought we'd do a live demo. I'm going to ask my colleague, Orville, to come on out. And Orville's going to do a couple of demos just to show off some of the cognitive services in actions. Morning, Orville.
Morning, Steve.
Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everyone. So previously, Steve showed how we could use natural language processing to really extract useful information out of a large corpus of information. But when you start talking about cognitive ability and the ability to mimic that, we have to go beyond extraction and actually get to the emotional aspects of things. So when I think about things that I personally am emotional about right now, one of them is University of Washington football. They are having an outstanding season for those of you who follow college football. And what I want to find out is not just how I feel about it, but what do other people feel about? What's the articles that are being written? So we can see here we have the big
you need
news
to
analytics.
Switch. Is it up on the screen?
Oh, they're not seeing it?
Yep, there we go.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go and make a quick search. I'm going to look up UW football. And the one thing I want to call out is that instead of just showing me a naive list of like everything in alphabetical order, is actually using some predictive capabilities to guess what I'm going to type. So I see a few things here, and we have a tough game coming up against Utah. So I'll do a search for that. We see that it comes up quickly. And we'll just go and search for that. And what's happening right now is that we actually go out to Bing, and we pull out all the articles that are relevant to this search. But we actually take it one step further and actually run a sentiment analysis. So you'll see that a lot of these articles are in green. And as I scroll through, you'll see that it will start to change, and it goes into more of a red, really highlighting some of the positive stuff in addition to the negative stuff. So really getting that sentiment, figuring out how people feel about it. If you take a look in the upper left corner, I guess for you, yes, the upper left, you'll see the sentiment distribution. So 90% of people out there who are writing about this agree with me that UW football is a good thing and we should do really well. So it's one thing to find sentiment and emotion in text, but what about in images, right? They say that a picture tells 1,000 words. Well, I'll also say that it also reveals a lot of emotions. So since we're already on the topic of football, I'm going to go and pick on somebody who's notorious for showing their emotions, a coach called Bill Belichick. So we'll pull that up there. I see hear some laughter. Many of you are familiar with him. We could see many modes of happy Bill, and I say that, of course, tongue-in-cheek. So let's go and pull one up. And you can see here that with cognitive services, it was quickly able to identify where the face is and then read into the emotions. And instead of just calling out one emotion, emotions are complex. So you can see here it's really calling out three. Part of it's neutral, because, you know, Bill, I don't know him, but he seems like he's always in this mood. The other part is that there's a little bit of anger and a little bit of contempt, which probably means that his team won, but they didn't win in the fashion that he would have liked. So we can see a few things there, and it's really great that we're able to do this with one image. But what about when there's multiple faces in a picture? Well, another sport that I'm really excited about, maybe too excited about, is track and field. And I'm going to bring up a picture from the women's 800-meter semifinals at the Rio Olympics. And for those of you who are familiar with the format, you have to come and think in the top three in the semifinals in order to qualify for the finals. You can see here very quickly that once again it identified the faces, but it also showed their different emotions. A few things I want to call out. So the runner that has a bishop on her bib, she's the one who won that semifinal. And for her, she has a combination of surprise, but also a little bit of fear. She knows that there's people behind her that want to catch her right at that line and prevent her from making it to the finals. The other one who on her bib, it says Bouchelle, she has a combination of fear, disgust, but a large part of happiness, because she was the one who just managed to squeak through. So you could see that it's able to actually take a look at all these faces and really do some sensitivity around it. And since we're talking about the Rio Olympics, right, it would be really wrong if I didn't do an analysis on the picture that launched a million memes. And for those of you who do not know what I'm about to tee up, this is actually the Michael Phelps death stare against Chad LaCrosse in the waiting room. So let's pull that one up and let's see what it has to say about that one. So we can see here, Chad LaCrosse has a combination of being neutral, but a lot of surprise. My guess is at this point, he's thinking to himself, is it really smart for me to be tempting one of the greatest Olympians of all time right before we're about to go in the pool? And then in the case with Michael Phelps, he has just a little bit of anger, but a lot of neutral. Once again, showing he's a big meat competitor. And even though he was upset, he managed to keep his emotions in check and let it out in the pool. So you can see that we're able to do a lot of great things as far as being able to analyze text and also to find emotions in pictures. So what happens when we actually combine this all together in a useful scenario? So in this case, I'm going to show a mall kiosk. Many of us go to the mall, and we see different products, and people are always interested whether we like them or not, and we're also interested in finding the products that appeal to us. So in this case, I'm going to take a look into the camera and make a funny face. So it goes through, it detects that I'm a male, it detects my age, and it says, you might be interested in some power tools. And that's actually a great suggestion, because when I get back to Seattle, my wife has a long list of things for me to do, so I should probably pick up the power tools before I get back. But the other great thing is I could take advantage of voice recognition. Wow, that's great that you suggested power tools. That's something I actually need. You can see that it quickly transcribed what I just said, ran a sentiment analysis on it, and saw that was a positive thing. So you saw very easily how with cognitive services, we're now able to tie a lot of these things together to mimic more human understanding and better aspects into our apps. For that, I'd like to thank you.
Ah, nicely done, Orville. Big hand. Let's flip back to slides. See what I did with the clicker. So we're starting to build up the tree here. Lots and lots of data on the bottom. Cognitive services to help us reason over large sets of data, do some interesting things with it. The next piece, we talk about conversations as a platform. Bots is sort of the term everyone uses. And so bots, we're sort of building our way up the stack. I have the ability to reason over large sets of data. I have large sets of data. What can I do as an interesting way to interact with it? And that's the discussion around bots. One of the things that I think the research is saying more and more is for all of us as users take our cell phone, we don't sort of use hundreds of apps. We might load them all, but there's five or six that we use all the time. And then there's a bunch where oftentimes we just want the information. I don't necessarily want to download an app to know the show times in Vegas or when the monorail runs or when my flight is or if my flight's on time. I'd like to be able to do it in the course of asking questions as part of a natural dialogue with other services I might be using. And so the notion of bots is the ability to have a front end or a tool for getting this information as opposed to having to get a distinct app for everything I want to do. And so if you look at the building blocks, the core services, the cognitive services, allows us to reason over the data, understand the language. A canvas or a conversational canvas is sort of, where do I have the discussion? If I'm in Skype, if I'm in a messenger app, if I'm in Slack, if I'm using a phone and I'm just using texting, where can I have a dialogue and ask a question? And then a bot is a general task assistant, and we'll come and spend a little bit more time on that. But sort of it's a question and answer. It can, if you use sentiment analysis and some of the other tools, actually have a personality. And then above that, there's this notion of agents, which is not only sort of a bot where it can answer questions, but something that has more information on you and your surroundings so it actually can be proactive or predictive. It knows your calendar. You've given it permission to your calendar. It knows that you have a meeting somewhere. It can say, hey, it's time to leave. Traffic's bad. It looked at the traffic and said you should get going. It's something that can say, hey, I see you didn't schedule lunch today. Should I, you know, your calendar's full. Should I get lunch scheduled? So that's something that works on your behalf in a proactive basis. So there's sort of a framework or a hierarchy here. I thought we'd do a little bit of this via demo. And so we'll do a couple of demos, and one of them will help me out here. So let's switch over to the demo machine. This is my presentation demo, I'm going to say. And so I've got my bot here. He's listening in. We can call him Murphy. Hey, dude, Googs here. Should be sound coming in.
Are you presenting the keynote?
Yes.
Is there a lot of people there? I'm nervous.
Relax. Tell us about bots.
Tell folks to come to the next presentation after this. I'll discuss about bots with the help of my assistant, Matt, in the conference room 122. Don't tell him I said that. But if you want to give people an overview of bots architecture, perhaps start here.
All right, so that's our very, very simple bot to kick off. And here's sort of a very, you know, simple graphical picture. I have my users here. You know, these are the folks, the channel users that I can work with. That's us. And underneath this, I put Skype here. You could pick any one of the services. That's where I want to sort of have an interaction with a bot. So I would treat a bot just like another person. Set it up like a conversation. It could be my presentation bot, and they'd be somebody I'd call on, just like I set up a messaging conversation with anyone else. If I go into the bot framework, one of the things we've been working on is when you build a bot, you don't necessarily want to have to build, you know, an interface for Skype and then an interface for Slack and then an interface for Kik and then you want something to help you go out to all of the different messenger type services that are out there. So we built a framework for that on top of Azure. It helps you build your sort of bot once and let it exist in all of the different or get access from all of the different services that are out there. And then at the heart of this is your web service, right? Build a RESTful API connection into whatever information or service you want to offer. You can run it on Azure. You can run it on your own service. You can run it on AWS. Connect into information. Maybe it's the Office Graph. Maybe you're trying to find people at work. So you can build a very simple bot to find a coworker's office. Instead of having to go to the app or the website to find out the person's name, you could do that. And then you can connect it in on the back end to all of the natural language service, or all of the all of the cognitive services, so that you can take advantage to reason over data. So a bot is simply a front end. And we built bots for shows, what session is when. We built bots to do fun stuff. We built one called Murphy that morphed people together, take the Statue of Liberty and Scott Guthrie's head. I think I showed that one here last year. So we're building more and more of the bots. Now, this is one of those technologies where you say, oh, cool, you know, we're there. But the answer is no. Users aren't trained yet. They don't go to bots for everything they do. It's early on. You actually have to have a good set of data to reason over and information to build an interesting bot that does good work for you. We have been experimenting with social bots. So take some of the other cognitive services, take the face recognition, take the sentiment analysis, take the ability to crawl the web, and build a bot that actually is a social bot that talks to you. It says, hey, this happened in the world today. You ask it questions, it tells you jokes. It's a social companion. We have one in China and one in Japan, and the one in Japan actually does the news on the local television station. Like, it's become a personality of its own. And so we're playing more and more with these things. I do think bots will become a front end over time and agents, as opposed to having all of the apps. I just want to ask, when does the train run, you know, between Seattle and Portland? I don't necessarily need to have to go get the Amtrak app for that. Not that I don't love the Amtrak app. But over time, this front end is going to change the way we interact with devices and go for information. And so this is the beginning of that. Matt Valesso is here. He's one of our experts. He's built a ton of bots. I have one more I thought we'd run past. I was going to ask Orville to come back out just to give you a sense you can have fun with these things. It's football season. If you play fantasy football, some of us need some help. So we built a bot to help us with NFL and fantasy football.
All right, so we're going to pull up our NFL bot now. And let me just say hi to it. So as Steve mentioned, you know, thousands of people play fantasy football, and some people are better than others. I'm not necessarily the best person at it. And the NFL bot's telling me a few things. Being a Seahawks fan, I like Russell Wilson. But right now, I need to go and take a look at my roster. Let's see if we need to make some adjustments here. So it's here, and due to machine learning, it's taking a look at kind of all the different players on my roster, how they've been performing in previous games, and some of the upcoming games they have. And it's actually telling me that it has some recommendations on how I can make my roster even better. So let's go ahead and take a look at those recommendations. So it's saying here that it's making a recommendation for me to switch Matt Ryan with Drew Brees. Not one that I would have necessarily thought of, so let's go and see what the bot might know that I don't. So it's going to go through, and it's going to allow me to compare the two. So I can see here some stats around Matt Ryan. Okay, he's looking good. That's why I picked him. And now I'm taking a look at Drew Brees. It's kind of an interesting one. He's saying he's playing Seattle. You know, Seattle has a very tough defense. But I've seen Deion Sanders use the recommendation, and it worked out well when he plays with the bot. So I'm going to give it a go as well. So let's go and do it. And automatically, it's going to go and actually make the adjustment to my roster. So we could see here that we could actually take advantage of machine learning and cognitive abilities to help us make better decisions and hopefully win the office pool and bragging rights on Monday.
Thanks, Orville. So that was sort of a fun one we built for a show a couple weeks ago. Let's switch back to slides. You know, this is the fun side of it. The serious side of it was when you think about customer care and people talk about digital transformation, the notion of having a bot, maybe not answering, but sitting alongside the human that's doing the call, listening in and fetching and retrieving information real time, very valuable sort of types of tools that are being built today. The other thing that I would say is this one is fun. If you go a little further in and you use the cognitive services and use our, we actually ran a pool last year for the across Microsoft for the Final Four and basically let people build their own models using all of the tools we have. And it turned out that it was somebody who didn't do a lot with basketball but built the best model that actually won that pool. Beat Satya, beat Joseph Sirosh, beat the rest of them in terms of building the model that did that. Now, this is sort of one side of the conversation, which is the way to use data, cognitive services, bots, agents in terms of our interaction. The other thing is how we interact with humans with our surroundings and sort of the world around us. And that's where the other piece of the conversation that's pretty hot right now is virtual reality, augmented reality, pick your term, mixed reality, et cetera. There's been a lot of work going on, and we did a release this week for Windows. It's the Windows 10 Creative Update. And there we tried to start to bring together a whole set of the 3D pieces and technologies that we've been working on. We've had a set of 3D APIs, a set of holographic APIs in Windows 10. They might have showed some of this earlier in the week. But essentially, With the APIs we have in there, you can first off, you can capture in 3D. You can use a camera or a tablet or other devices to start to capture objects in 3D. We've made a 3D version of Paint so you can bring them into a fun tool. People will build, you know, professional tools, but a fun tool for editing that object. We've then created a community where you can share the 3D object out. It's called Remix. And so now I've created an object. I might have modified it using Paint. I might have built it using the 3D Paint. I can share it out into the community. I can get feedback. I can get ideas from others. You can use it on the web. We support all of the 3D capabilities in Edge. And then once you've got that, you can use the 3D printers. We've been working, obviously, for a while now on 3D printing. You can then take it and use it in other applications. We showed off a version of PowerPoint that now supports 3D objects. So you can pull that 3D object into other applications to make them sort of come to life. And then, of course, you can bring it to life with AR and VR headsets, with HoloLens in our case. We also announced that there's a number of the OEMs that are working on VR headsets for Windows 10, so you don't need a different piece of hardware. You don't need any special configuration. You can just work with Windows 10 as it is, and it'll end up working across all the applications. So all of the pieces of the puzzle for 3D are starting to come together. And for that one, I have a video. This is actually the first time this video has been shown. I'll just highlight for just 1 second the difference in quality between this video and the one I showed you at the beginning, just to show you what 15 years does, not just in terms of creative thinking, but quality of the videos you can create. So let's go ahead and roll that video.
Someone told me long ago, there's a calm before the storm. I know it's been coming for some time.
When it's over, so they say, it'll rain a sunny day. I know, shining down.
I wanna know, have you ever seen the rain? And I wanna know, have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day? Yesterday and days before, sun is cold and rain is hard. I know, been that way for all my time.
Till forever on it goes, through the circle fast and slow.
I know, it can't stop, I wonder.
That's a pretty good one. That tells a great story, I think. And the, you know, if you think back, sort of a Kinect sensor is a piece of technology, and 3D printing is a piece of technology, and you know, VR is a piece of technology. When the pieces start to come together, you can begin to see sort of where it can take us. And again, won't happen tomorrow, but a lot of the pieces are already in existence today, and that's the direction in terms of 3D. Now, the most fun part of this one for me, of course, is the HoloLens. It's sort of the most unique piece of hardware that's come out into the market, honestly, since I've been in the industry. And so we see Princess Leia here as sort of one of the original holograms brought to life. This capability is essentially what's coming. Now, We can't do it sort of just sort of in your eye on its own today, but with the HoloLens, that is where we're getting to. So I thought I'd sort of just say, what is a HoloLens? So let's just sort of walk our way through this. This, first off, it's a computer, right? It's got a sort of a on button and an off button, a brighter button and a dimmer button, volume up, volume down. It's got a jack in the back for sound, a micro USB, so it's a full running computer. It's in a small package. It's passively cooled. And so that's sort of the first piece. The second thing is it's an amazing set of advanced sensors. It essentially maps the room around you when you're using it. So it has a set of cameras to map to the room. It's got light-sensitive cameras, so it can deal with the different types of light that are out there. Obviously, picks up sound. It's got depth. So it essentially, when you put it on, it maps the area that you're around, and it's creating that room in something that can be reused. So when you map a hologram onto it, it's mapped the room for you, and that's what it's using as a starting point. And so it has all the sensors to do that. And basically, think of your original Kinect that was mapping you as a human. And we used to use those on their own to map objects and turn them into 3D objects. This is a much more advanced version of that. So that's sort of the second piece. So now it's mapped the room, and then it has a holographic sort of transparent lens in here, which is a light pipe where the holograms can then be projected onto this, this room that we've recreated. And so here I basically have two sort of high-def 16x9 screens. I have the ability to do a very high light point density hologram, and that's sort of how you want to look at the hologram, is the number of points of light. So we can do very high density for that. It's actually measuring the distance to your retina on an ongoing basis, so it can make sure it knows where your eye is, because that's how all of this works. And so we have this piece, which is another piece of technology. So first the computer, then the sensors to map the room, then this transparent lens that actually is doing all of the work to basically give you the holographic images and project those onto the physical space around you. Now I've got to go sort of mix all of those pieces together. So there's actually a holographic processing unit. So this computer has a CPU and a GPU, but now if I want to take all this spatial information, the projected hologram on top of it, the fact that I'm listening to surround sound, I might be speaking, I might be using gestures, and honestly not get motion sickness. If you've ever sat in any kind of virtual reality or sort of occluded space for too long, it can be a little hard to do. In this world, it gets even harder because of the frame rate. So there's an entire processing unit just to make sure all of this works and that you can have this holographic experience that feels real to life. It's a great experience. It's immersive. It feels very comfortable. And so there's a whole new sort of processing unit that's been built for that. When you bring all of those things together, the last piece then is put some surround sound in it, make it so it knows where voice is coming from, gesture recognition, all the other pieces that you would want. And so the spatial sound and the rest of it is the experience. So I have the holographic part, I have the sound around me, I have the mapping of the room, and essentially a truly immersive experience, but it's in the room that I'm in. It's not this, I'm not in some other room, it's not an occluded view. It really is mixed reality. It is truly an amazing piece of hardware, because the physics behind generating the hologram, different from the technology used to build a computer, different from the holographic processing unit, the surround sound, the size that it's in, self-contained. You can move around, you can move your head, you can speak, and again, you're not getting motion sickness. It's all moving with you, it's mapped. It's a pretty incredible piece of hardware. Now, we started with the Princess Leia video, the picture. That is where this is heading. You can do lots of things with this, but I wanted to show you again for the first time. This is a video that's still under creation from one of our partners. And so what we'll do is we'll go ahead and roll this video, which is essentially that scenario coming to life for the first time and sort of under construction. So let's go ahead and run that video.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for your interest in the 2017 tire collection. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I'd like to show you our newly redesigned tread. It dissipates more efficiently by 40%. Take a look now.
Okay. Show tread. Oh, that's really cool. My clients are going to love this.
That's great. This tire also has new sensor technology that senses the road conditions and displays the information on the vehicle's instrument panel. Have a look now.
Show sensor. That's really cool. I like what I'm seeing here.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, I look forward to hearing from you guys, and have a great day.
Thanks. Goodbye.
So, coming to life, you'll notice that Valorem built this, so we want to thank them for that, not Microsoft. So we're getting to the point now where you have partners who are building the scenarios on top of this, and we're showing more and more of the scenarios. The kits are becoming more available. Again, this isn't something that we'll find in every living room in the next year. Project out 5 to 10 years, both in terms of the advancements in the hardware, the capability to build the scenarios. Mix that all the way back in with bots and cognitive services and the data behind it and the things you can do. The experience is changing, essentially, how we'll interact with computing and computing technology. And that's at the heart of this. On one end, we have all of the information that we can synthesize and use to be more predictive, to be more immersive. And then we have the experiences in the 3D and the augmented world that come together. The last thing I wanted to highlight real quick was the Windows 10 Creative Edition that came out this week. So the notion of how we create, and so whether it's the HoloLens type of creation, whether it's art, whether it's music, the notion of creativity and making that sort of easier and more immersive, that's what this release was all about. 3D, I already showed that piece. That was a big component of it. There was obviously some fun parts around gaming, the ability to create your own e-sport or e-tournament if you wanted to. Obviously, the high-resolution gaming and gaming play, bringing people to life more, being able to have an individual as a favorite, essentially, and bring them to the taskbar, bring them to the screen, and share information with them more easily. And then, of course, the last new device that's out there. So let me go ahead and run a video on this one, which is sort of captures the Creative Edition from the launch this week. And of course, the last piece of that was the Surface Studio. I'd be honest, I tried to get one here. There are too few of them right now for me to be able to grab one from the Wednesday launch and get it over here. But it is a phenomenal piece of hardware, just in terms of the screen itself, the way the inking works, how smooth it is. The new dial is actually very cool. You have to play with it to get a feel for it. But as an accessory for a PC, if you're doing anything creative, you can use it both in the creative sense, but also just for quick sort of access on the screen. If you think of the dial when that was first added to the mouse, this is sort of the, they'll hate me because it's not really what the analogy should be, but it's the much, much more advanced version of having that capability. And every app that's built, you can customize what the dial does then. So it's a real cool extension for app developers. It's a great experience for the users. It's a phenomenal piece of hardware. It's at the high end. It's for the creative side of this conversation. But again, we're mixing all the pieces together. So the new hardware that keeps coming, you know, if I think about the HoloLens and the AR, VR side, all these pieces connect. And so that's sort of my thesis. You know, I didn't cover robotics today, security. We covered some intelligence. There's biometrics. The things that are driving the conversations today, digital transformation, how I build projects, sort of IoT, big data, AR, VR, they're changing the way we work, they're changing the things that we build, they're changing the requests we get from our mutual sets of customers that we work with. But the next wave is sort of just starting in some ways. If you take the cognitive services, the big data, the 3D, the AR, VR, and some of these other pieces, and you look forward, there's so much more that will occur. And I'm not, you know, I always admire the people that can look 10 and 15 years out and create that, exactly what that scenario looks like. Never my skill. That was always, Bill was always the master of that and creating that vision, and there are others. But knowing now that these are the building blocks that we're going to work with, and that while they feel like silos today, we go off and do AR over here, We do IoT over there. We do cog services over here, bots there. The truth is these things will all weave together in the same way that sort of bandwidth, storage, and compute is woven together today to create what we're working on in the world we're in. These things will weave together for that next generation. So I leave you with the thought and the idea, sort of, what are you going to do? Like, how will you help shape the future? What ideas can you feed us in terms of how these things come together? I'd love scenarios for the next 15 or 10-year video. But in the end, staying in touch with these new capabilities while we're doing our day job, that's the fun of what we do, right? The ability to both be here and be at the places we work and interact with these things while we do our day job, and hopefully some of our day job is doing some of these things, that's what it's all about. And so with that, I wish you a happy Friday. I hope that was a lightweight way to get the day going. And you guys have a great day. Thank you for your time.